Good evening, and welcome to Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is a dynamic radio program spotlighting accomplished talents in the arts arena with discussions of the challenges and some advice in making it in the visual, musical, literary, painting, and performing arts. As a unique part of the show, we will interview professional guests, experts in the fields of entertainment law, copywriting, studio recording, publishing, and promoters, all relative to this highly competitive industry. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are honored to have a very interesting guest in the music field, a young man in the career of a professional DJ. When I looked into this field, I found that even when one says DJ, they just think offhandedly that it is someone who plays music, but not spin music. DJing is also a very diversified field within itself. You can be a resident DJ, a club DJ, a social bar DJ, a performer DJ, a guest DJ, a radio DJ, and several other categories. Our guest is Reginald Kelly Jr., known as the musicologist of Professional Music Entertainment Services. His biography. Reginald Kelly has been entertaining many years as a professional disc jockey in the Baltimore metropolitan area. His professionalism goes over 35 years. With a vast knowledge of many genres of music and expertise in presentation, mixing skills, and his distinctive voice on the microphone, Mr. Kelly has gained a wide crossover of clients requesting his services. A graduate of the Baltimore City College High School in Baltimore, Maryland, Mr. Kelly has always been known for his eclectic taste in music, even as a youngster. With class, style, and a whole lot of personality in his presentation, Mr. Kelly has gained a loyal and faithful following through the years. Welcome to the show, Reggie.
Well, Andell, I appreciate this opportunity very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, yes, and I'm happy to have you on the show, but I've been trying to get you, but you've been so busy. So we'll get right into the questions, and like I said, you can just elaborate as much as you like. Some music lovers state that they grew up listening to a lot of music in the home. What was the catalyst of how you got into the music arena?
Well, I guess pretty much the same thing. When I was a youngster in my early teens, I guess somewhere between 10, 12, up to maybe 16 years old, I grew up in an environment where everybody had a console stereo and everybody would keep their doors open and friends and relatives could just come in and out. You know, it was a much safer, much more pleasant environment back then for folks, and we all had the radio stations that we listened to. There wasn't no such thing as black radio to a certain degree until later on, but we listened to my parents and my father's parents would listen to Sam Cooke, Fats Domino, you know, Jerry Butler, and some of the earlier doo-wop 50s, 60s music, and so I heard this, you know, all the way through from my junior high school days all the way up. So definitely, you know, being in the home around music and having music on was definitely a great influence on me.
Excellent. And I know a lot of us probably can identify with that. In that particular field, experience, excellence, and recognition usually comes with time. When did you first get started as a DJ?
Well, I guess officially, you know, I've been doing the DJ thing I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30 years, probably started officially, you know, doing gigs around early mid-80s. But actually, it goes back a little bit further than that, because when I was in high school, I think it was my junior year at Baltimore City College High School, I attended my senior prom, which was held down at the Lloyd Baltimore Hotel in downtown Baltimore. And at the time, the school had contracted the services of the Manhattans, the original Manhattans.
Wow.
And for some reason, I don't know if it was a contractual reason or lack of communication or whatever, the Manhattans didn't show up. Mm-hmm. So I was somewhat drafted or thrusted into a position where I had one of the little clothes-type record players with the 45 spindle. And I took the microphone in the auditorium and put the microphone down to the speaker. And I wound up running home, getting some 45s and some records to play for our prom, which was not too well attended because of the fact that the Manhattans didn't show up. And everybody was looking forward to that. But, you know, that was my first actual experience of spinning music in somewhat of a public forum.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. Again, during that time, we know that there's a certain atmosphere of continuum of music. Now, during that time, 30 years, the 1980s, what was the atmosphere of the DJ arena when you got into the business?
Well, in the 80s, when I kind of got my feet wet, you know, doing local bar scene and club scene. The disco thing is really where it all started in the mid to late 70s, because the disco era came in and that thrusted a lot of musicians into becoming DJs, because the clubs were not going to pay the money. They were looking at a DJ and saying, well, why should we pay a band X amount of dollars when we can pay one person to play any type of music we want? And so that's the way it pretty much started. And it wasn't as competitive as it is today.
Okay. Right, you're right, because during the 70s, that's when the nightclubs, I think, gave the discotheque from the French.
Yeah, right.
Thing, and then it came into the U.S. So along with that, you had the mixing and everything that came onto the market, which popularized what the DJs could actually do rather than the band. And then that progressed into mixing and the beats and everything. And you're absolutely right. And that's what happened with the 70s. Again, getting started can sometimes be very scary when you haven't really did it, let's say, at a big event. Do you remember your first gig and what impact did it have on your life?
I've had so many what I call, you know, monumental moments. But
if
I was to try to pinpoint one, I would say,
Let's say your first big gig.
My first big gig.
Besides the prom.
I would say I did a cabaret where I actually was I was the MC of a show, and I spun music during the breaks. And there was a couple local groups, and there was one somewhat regional and national group, and I spun music, and I was also the MC, so I came dressed. I was required to come dressed. I had a 3-piece suit. Back in the day, that time it was bell bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, acetate knits and silken wools and different things like that. And I had big tie, and I emceed the show and introduced the acts, and also spun a little music interim. So and for a promoter, that was at a big hall, and it was attended by, you know, over 300 people, which was big back then, you know.
Oh, okay. Great. So, cabaret. Oh, boy, we do remember cabarets very much so. And then you played the music of that particular era. Was that the 70s or 80s?
Well, and both, you know.
It was both?
That was 70s. That was 70s music, you know, pretty much. And I did back to the 60s, and, you know, and it depends on the demographics and clientele attending the event. That's something that I've always prided myself on, is being able to read. A good DJ is supposed to be able to read his crowd and be able to assess what he thinks they would like. And one of the things that help a great deal, of course, is taking requests.
Right. Okay, well, that's my next question, because I was going to ask you, like most things in life, like you're saying, you can't please everybody. In the DJ field, is it important to be familiar with many genres of music?
It's always been a rule of thumb with me, going back to my high school days, you know, between 1968 and 1972. I had a music teacher who was still alive, Mr. William L. Grigsby, and he taught us how to listen to music and appreciate all types of music. If you know how to listen to music, how to pick it apart, like what makes a rhythm section funky? How is it that an orchestra of 50, 70, 80, 100 people can play together so softly that you can sit in the front row and still talk? You know, rock in different genres of music. I remember when Jesus Christ Superstar first came out, you know, and we were exposed to that. We were exposed to many different types of music, although we were predominantly a black at that particular time. We were exposed to many, many, many different types of music. And that's where I attribute my multiculturalism as far as music is concerned. I owe a debt of gratitude to my musical high school teacher, William L. Grigsby, for that exposure to all the music, from classical all the way up and everything in between. And it's very important, I think, to make money and to prosper in this business, to be able to be versatile enough to play different types of music other than your particular ethnicity.
Oh, absolutely. That's an extremely good point and well explained what you said. Listen to the music and the rhythms of the different types of music. And I almost can akin that to the fact that when people say, oh, I love that song, they don't really know what they're really listening to, but it's what you're saying. They listen to the music and they can hear the rhythm, and that's why they like that particular song. But
absolutely,
you, as a musicologist, know that the study of music means that you must listen to the music and know the rhythms. And I think that's why sometimes you might know this too, I've heard this. Some people say, oh, I don't like that. But basically, it could be your rule of thumb. Your rule of thumb is that maybe first you have to listen to the music in order to say, well, I do like the music. Because I know you've heard a lot of people say, I don't like this kind. I'm not going to say what kind of music, but you know probably generally what most people say, what kind of music they don't like. But I have found that to be true too, Reggie, that if I listen to the music, I can say, oh, even though it's a different type of music, I begin to say, oh, I like it. I think you might have answered this, but maybe you can just elaborate on it a little more. What genre of music do you mostly like and play?
Personally, between three or four different genres of music. Really, I like all types of music. You know, I can appreciate,
being a musicologist,
as long as it's good. But particularly for my personal enjoyment, jazz. You know, both, you know, mainstream or straight ahead and contemporary. Blues, I've gotten into blues lately. And oldies. I love oldies but goodies. And an oldies record can be, right now, being that it's 2015, can be 20 years old.
Right.
So a song in, like, it came out in 1985, 20 years ago, would be considered an oldie but goodie now. You know? So I love oldies. I mean, that music was just pure. It was acoustic. It wasn't as electronic and prefabricated and like music is and computerized like it is today. And also, it was more difficult to mix music back then. The technology today allows you to be able to seemingly or seamlessly mix music with hardly no effort. It was a tedious job back then. I mean, you know, before pitch control came out on turntables. You know, you would take your finger and spin the record manually. slow it down, speed it up to mix into a blend into the next record. Yeah, so.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to take a little break here. We do have the opportunity to go past our time since we started late. So I am going to carry on the schedule as usual because we do and we will go past 3 o'clock. So what we're going to do is take a little break for exactly 6 seconds.
Alright, let's get loose.
District.
Yeah,
that. What up, y'all? Just came to your city to say what's up.
What up?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Show me love.
Show me love.
Hey.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me. Got a pocket full of fresh dough. So you know I gotta bake it, homie. And I'm thankful. Get whatever you want, it's on me.
Hi, and welcome back to Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks, and we want to say thanks so much for listening. We are broadcasting on bbsradio.com, station 2. If you want to hear any of our previous broadcasts, just go to our website and click on the archive link. We also ask, and we appreciate that if you would send your comments and suggestions, send them to email musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, we would love to have your comments and suggestions. Please send them to musicradio34@gmail.com. We return to our honored guest today, Mr. Reginald Kelly Jr., the musicologist and the professional DJ under the services of Professional Services Music Entertainment. Reggie, again, if a DJ became a specialist in his or her career, what type of events would they mostly do?
I think most. I think to be prosperous and to really make it in a business, you know, try to tailor yourself to doing high-end corporate and weddings. The wedding DJ business is booming. I mean, I remember last year, just for example, between June and December, latest December, the end of December, before the holidays, and even a little after the holidays, I was booked every Saturday night doing a specialty event or bull roast or a wedding, you know, day or evening. So, you know, and once again, you know, not restricting yourself to just gearing towards one particular ethnic group, but trying to learn and expose yourself to different genres of music, different types of music. The more music you have under your belt as far as the styles of music you can play, the more money you'll make.
Corporate and weddings. And you said weddings are really, and you're probably right. Now, would these weddings be these big affairs, or do you also would suggest that if they have like a wedding outside or a little small wedding in a house, would that be included in trying to get those gigs as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it depends, you know, and it's all up to, you know, when it comes to doing wedding gigs, when it comes to a DJ doing wedding gigs, the main thing that a DJ has to remember is it's all about the bride and the groom, particularly the bride, whatever they want, you know. And one of the things that makes it a little bit easier for the DJ is concerned as far as the selection of music is concerned, not just in the specific songs requested, like the first dance, the father and daughter dance, the mother and son dance, et cetera, would be the playlist for the party aspect of the reception. And most of the time, you know, I and a lot of DJs and DJ companies just ask the bride to say, well, look, what do you guys want to hear? What are some of your favorite songs you like to dance to? And I've had a bride send me as many as a 4 to 5 page list of selections. And what I do is I research them. I go into my collection. And, of course, everything's computerized nowadays on my hard drive. And I just look at their list, and I check off all the songs that they requested that I have. And anything that I did not have, I'll go and research it and purchase it online or download it or whatever. So by the time I get to the reception, and I do this well in advance, I always ask the bride to contact me no later than 2 weeks prior to the wedding to have all this information. So by the time I get to the wedding, you know, I just pull up a folder in my computer of with their name on it, and I just play from that on the party. And, of course, if someone were to come up and ask for a request, if a bride and groom want to hear certain records, you know, only, and sometimes that happens, then I politely and professionally tell the guest, I said, I would love to play the song, but the bride and groom sent me a list, and this is what they want to hear. I said, well, if you want, you can go and ask the bride and groom if it was already to play that song. So that's the
very
easiest
good
thing to do. I love playlists. Give me a playlist any day. I love
excellent
it.
Excellent. Yeah, okay, we're going to repeat some of these things that you're saying. I didn't write it down, but you can certainly do it because I have another question that's relative to that. So you'll be repeating some of that, which is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things one should know before getting into the DJ business? And I say this because I'm sure, I don't know if you've been to a couple of fairs, but I certainly have, where the DJ was absolutely unprepared. And necessarily, does that necessarily apply to all fields of DJ? Because, you know, there's the other fields, like I mentioned in the intro. You can have a radio DJ, you know, a club DJ, all types of DJs. But my question is, what are some of the things one should know before they actually start getting into the DJ business?
Well, you know, just like any other business, you know, you got to kind of do a little research, marketing
mm-hmm.
research in a way, in the area you're in and or the areas in how far away you want to travel and the places you want to play, you know, demographically, you know, what the taste is, even up to the income bracket of most people, if they're middle class, upper class, you know, blue collar,
mm-hmm.
you know. What kind
excellent.
Of music they like,
mm-hmm.
and also and then you know aside from the music, there's the equipment. That's the biggest investment. Aside from the music, the equipment. You know, you need to really buy or purchase top notch equipment. And it seems like every year the equipment changes and is upgraded. So you're constantly upgrading. You know, first there was passive, what they call passive speakers, which you had to have an amplifier to push the sound. Now
mm-hmm.
everybody's going with powered speakers where the amp is built into speakers, which and everybody's downsizing nowadays. You don't have to carry all these huge big speakers around with you. You know, particularly with a lot of different events or more classy events, they don't need all that. They just want a good sound. Make sure your speakers sound good. Make sure you have a good mixer. Make sure you have good CD players if you're still playing CD players. If not, a good computer that can handle, you know, the DJ programs, which really doesn't take a lot of power or a lot of memory to run, and familiarize yourself with the DJ programs and how to play music. And then you got personality. The DJ has to have personality, unless he's in a situation like a nightclub DJ where he's up in a DJ booth and he doesn't necessarily have to or comes in contact with the public. He's just up there to mix music. But if you're going to be out in front and you're going to be open and people are going to approach you, you have to have personality. You have to be professional. And also, along with that, is appearance. I've been to so many places and seen so many DJs who dress too down, you know. Now, when I do a little neighborhood bar or something like that and people are in jeans and they're casually dressed, I'll make casually dressed, but I've always had the rule of thumb, and several of my colleagues feel the same way, that we're supposed to look better than the clients. And that way, we're on stage. We're out front. You know, and people, first impressions everlasting. Before a person even hear you play music, when they walk into that hall and they see your setup and they see you, the first thing they're going to see is you before they hear anything or before you start mixing or playing or talking on the mic. And that's very important. So
well,
I would say
you seem to have answered all the six next questions, but we're going to go through it anyway. Okay.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to go any further right now because, Reggie, I can't go any further without asking, how did you choose your professional name, Reggie K, the musicologist?
Well, when I first started out back in the late 70s, early mid 80s, I was calling myself, I abbreviated my last name, Kelly, and just Reggie K, the DJ, because it flows, it has a rhyme. K rhymes with DJ. K and J, Reggie K, the DJ. And I was calling myself that for a long time. Then all of a sudden, I ran into other DJs that had the same name. Not that name per se, but the same first name as myself, Reggie. There was a guy named Reggie that played at the Five Mile House in Baltimore when Wesley Johnson had it. There's another DJ Reggie out here. And then there was DJ Reggie Reg, who was on a popular hip-hop R&B station in Baltimore, 92Q.
Oh.
So there was a lot of Reggies. So what I wanted to do was set myself aside or separate it so that people won't get me confused with the other Reggies.
Okay.
So I came up with the word musicologist because of my knowledge of music and my ability to be able to spiel off, you know, anecdotes of information about an artist or about a song and whatnot, and I became known for that. So I decided to call myself the musicologist. You know, and sometimes I'll tackle on Reggie Kelly, you know, or DJ Reggie Kelly, but the musicologist. So now I've got, it took a while, but now I've gotten people used to referring to me as the musicologist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been in your presence at some of your presentations, and I just want to let the audience know that everything you're saying so far is the absolute truth, and plus you sing, not only is your voice so articulately, tonally beautiful, so is your singing. And so most of the times when I have a guest, I do research on them, but if I know them like I know you, it's not too much. So what I do is say, well, okay, he said musicologist. What is a musicologist? And I looked it up, and it says, the scholarly analysis, the knowledge of and research on music styles. And the unique part of it is a part of the humanities, the discipline of performance and communication of applied music. And you cover all of that. Then I said, well, okay. I looked up and I didn't know it was so long, the history of the DJ and the disc jockey. That was like 4 pages long. So I just broke it down into disc jockey is a person who introduces and plays recorded popular music, especially on radio or as a hired person for an event. And I don't know if you agree with this, but he said it was started in 1909.
I didn't believe that.
A young man of 16 years of age called Roy Newby. He was the first one to actually start doing this DJ style of playing music. And then it goes, I looked up and it was 1927. And the first time the word disc jockey was used was in 1935. Commentator, American radio commentator, hold on to your hat, Walter Winchell.
Oh, yeah.
He was the one that coined the term disc jockey. And he referred to it as a combination of disc, meaning referring to the disc records, and jockey, which is on an operator of a machine, and description of the first announcer to become a disc jockey star was Martin Block. So it's a very interesting history. And like I said, you really fit the bill of what it really is supposed to be. But you are still, Reggie, in a stage of adventure and memories. However, at this stage of your career, what special memorable event or events come to mind?
Well, without elaborating on any particular one or several, whenever I thoroughly enjoy doing corporate events, I've had the pleasure and the opportunity of being contracted, my services being contracted to do just to name a few, which your audience might not be totally aware of, but from those who are local in Maryland, in the D.C., Maryland area, they might be familiar. CQ, which is the State Employees Credit Union, their main office is located in Lithicum, Maryland, and it houses about 400 employees. And so whenever they do a post-holiday party held at the Hilton out of the airport, and everybody brings their significant others or guests, so that's 800-plus people. I've also done a branch, a local branch of Long & Foster Realty, their Christmas party, which is held at a beautiful home in the Mount Washington area. And this year will be the third year doing that. So I have several repeat clients, both in the corporate and some upscale client, personal clients. I did without mentioning names specifically, I did a couple's home New Year's Eve party a couple of years ago. They have a beautiful home in the Owings Mills, Pikesville area, in a gated community. And mm-hmm. I did their party, and they were so impressed that, you know, aside from what I charged them, they tipped me $100. So I went back to them. I said, hey, look, you gave me too much money. He said, no, Reg, you did a fantastic job. Thank you very much. Oh, okay, thank you. Okay. So I've been blessed. I've been very fortunate to be able to pick and choose and to do some really, really nice events. As a matter of fact, I got a phone call earlier today at a venue that just opened up in Baltimore, in downtown Baltimore, brand-new sports bar called Game. The owner contacted me. I reached out, and he contacted me earlier today, and I have an appointment with him tomorrow to come down and talk about doing something at his place. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Great. Thank you for that dissertation. And like I said before, you deserve everything you get, because the only reason why you're getting all these calls is because you are one of the best in this particular field, in this particular area. What we're going to do right now is take another little break, and I'm going to let you going to get some water. So it's going to be a break in 10 seconds, and we'll be back in 10. Thanks for listening to Wish Upon a Star. We're broadcasting on bbsradio.com, station 2. Thanks so much for listening, and we would love to hear your comments and suggestions, and send them to us at our email address, musicradio34@gmail.com. Today, our honored guest is Reginald Kelly, professional DJ, and we're going to continue our conversation. And he's also known as the musicologist under the Professional Music Entertainment Services. Okay, we're back, Reggie. You're okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to continue on this. And like I said, you last told us that you tried to get into the habit of doing upscale clients, not only because possibly they're more profitable, but it's a good experience, too, to play all kinds of different types of music. And, of course, confidence in any endeavor comes with support. In this highly populated field, Reggie, what is the best way to promote you, yourself, or anyone as a DJ in this business?
Well, I think, you know, especially for today, as far as today is concerned, social media is probably the best way to go to get the word out about yourself, your business, what you do, and to make contact, because most people nowadays are not phone people anymore. You know,
yeah.
they would much rather shoot you an email or text you or inbox you on Facebook than to pick up a phone and talk to you in person.
Right.
And so you have to, I look at that as very impersonal, but that's the way a lot of people conduct business. you know, nowadays. And so you have to conform to that. So social media, you know, is the way to go, particularly Facebook. Now, a lot of people frown upon Facebook because there are folks who are on Facebook that post a lot of other things aside from trying to promote themselves or their businesses or what they do as far as getting the word out, you know, the people, contact people. But I use it, Facebook, mainly and specifically for promotional purposes. And, of course, you know, there's a little percentage of socialism involved. As far as, you know, getting to know people, getting people, you know, introducing yourself to people, letting them know what you do. Hey, I'm available. You know, I'm going to be appearing at this place tonight, or I got this kind of a thing coming up. And so, you know, there's over a billion people on Facebook every day. So I would say social media. I haven't gotten really into the Instagram thing too much. I tweet every once in a while, but for the most part, you know, Facebook is my main source of, you know, of getting the word out, aside from emailing people, you know, which saves you stamps and envelopes and paper. You know, that's one thing. With the technology, you can compose one email or one letter and send it out to thousands of people at a time. So I love it.
Right.
And if you can afford it, you know, maybe you might want to do a radio or TV spot.
Mm-hmm. Right. I understand also that Facebook now has a separate entity that does business pages. So if you wanted to actually advertise on Facebook, they have a department there where somebody would set it up, and you could still, they would set it up for you just like if it was a website, but it would be on Facebook. So again, like you say, the social media is the way to go. I think somebody did a survey also, Reggie, that said if you send somebody a text, they will answer it 85% of the time
right.
faster than they would any other call. So you've
right,
got a
absolutely.
Point there that has been proven. So let's say if you were asked by someone the best way to get started in the DJ business, what would you say to them?
Know your music. Have a decent collection, depending on the audience you want to reach. Good equipment. Get some good equipment. Invest in good equipment. Transportation to get the equipment there. And start doing some networking, you know, be it through email, through letter, social media. And get the word out and let people know who you are, what you do, and give them all the contact information. Put it out there. Or do
okay.
very, very nice radio interviews like this one.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're like I just finished saying before, there's a lot of people who go out there who want to make some extra money. They say, oh, okay, I'll be a DJ. And then, like I said, when you get there, you're like, excuse me. You know, they it's just a mess. And I'm sure you've encountered that yourself.
Oh,
but
yeah.
when you've seen the best, like yourself or maybe one or two of the others, you know, that's what is needed. If everybody listens to this broadcast again, they will hear what you had said before. Typically, what type of equipment would a novice DJ need? So let's point that out again. They don't have too much money, but they have a little money. But what is the typical type of equipment that you would need in the very beginning?
Well, depending on the size of the arena you want to play in, you know,
okay.
You know, whether you want to do large halls or just small little intimate bars or pubs or taverns, restaurants, you know, I guess if you have a budget, you know, of no less than $500 and maybe up to between $500 and maybe $1,200, $1,500, you could probably buy a nice little portable decent system, you know, two power speakers and a mixer and then, of course, you know, your computer, you know, you want to, there's certain requirements that the computer has to have, you know, laptop, you know, Apple seems to be the computer of choice, you know, for a lot of the younger DJs because of the iOS system, operating system it has. I personally couldn't afford an Apple, you know, but I've seen a lot of other DJs who have been able to do just as well of a job with a HP or Compact or Dell, you know, as long as it has the power, the storage space, the memory, or the RAM, you know, because the more memory and more RAM you have, the faster, and the processor, and the better the processor, the faster the computer will work. So when you go to play music and pull up all these things and pull up your songs, it'll do it just like that. So I would say, you know, the equipment, you know, and also, you know, get a decent, you know, don't take any shortcuts if you can't help it. If you can't afford it, you know, then get one piece at a time, get a little bit at a time until you get what you need,
right?
What you want, you know, not necessarily what you need. That's the biggest piece of advice I can give.
Okay, what is your thought about external drives? Because some people will say, okay, I want to be a DJ, and I know you don't advocate putting everything on a PC that you're using for other stuff. That if you're going to do it for DJ, you should have that as a standalone system just for DJ. And then they may just go ahead with the external drive. So what is your thought about doing something like that rather than having the laptop as your primary system for DJ?
Well, of course, if you have a laptop with a large enough drive in it, you know, like most laptops nowadays, you know, they'll come with no less than a terabyte, which equates to 1,000 gigabytes. And just to give you an idea of the space that for songs, I would say, you know, one gigabyte can hold anywhere between 200 to 250 songs at an average of 3 to 4 minutes a song. That's just to give you an idea.
Right.
So, you know, I wouldn't say there's pros and cons to it, but there are some DJs, I've asked different DJs and karaoke hosts, do you have an external? Do you use external and put all your stuff on, or do you internal? Well, I talked to a guy the other day. He said, well, I have all mine on my computer. Because he has a large hard drive. He has a terabyte and a half. So, you know, that eliminates an extra piece you have to take along. You know, like if you have to bring, what will happen, worst case scenario, if you left your external hard drive home, like I did one night. Boy, that was hairy. But, and also to have a backup, you know, have a backup.
That's what I was getting ready to say. What about that backup? Because I also know of an experience for a person who they left their laptop on a table, turned around, went somewhere, came right back, and somebody had taken the laptop with all his music and everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was
a lot of DJs take two laptops when they have always, you know, they can afford to have a backup system, which is a great idea. You know, you never know. You know, the inevitable could happen. You know, a lot of DJs also nowadays are supplementing their system as far as their computer is concerned with tablets where they can go online.
Okay.
And a lot of places have Wi-Fi capability. And these tablets, you know, you don't have to buy iPod or iPad, you know, from Apple. You can get, I mean, all the major companies, you know, that make computers and software now make tablets. And you can buy a tablet for as little as under $100. And I know several DJ friends of mine, and they run a line out from the tablet, and they go online, and it supplements their collection. I mean, they might have a large collection of music or not, or they may have everything that's needed. Let's say you're at a wedding. Someone walks up and asks you for a request. You research it on your hard drive, and you go, oh, I don't have that song. Instead of telling the customer that, if you have your tablet with you, and if they don't have Wi-Fi in the place, I always take along a hotspot. Like my internet service provider has a hotspot where I'm mobile, and it covers a lot of space. So I take my tablet or my iPad. I take my hotspot. If there's not internet capability at the place where I'm playing at, and they ask me for a song, and I pull up. I have a Rhapsody account. That's just one of many. Some people have iTunes, Rhapsody, and there's a couple other companies out there that, you know, that you can pull up a song, type it in, search, and pull up a song on the fly.
Yeah.
And play it. And to the customer or the client, it make you look like, wow, this guy has everything. No, I don't have everything, but I have a lot. And
but you do have to
good.
Sign up for those two particular browsers, don't you? The two apps for iTunes and Rhapsody and all the rest.
Yeah, they're subscribed accounts. You know, I pay for Rhapsody. You know, Rhapsody is very nominal. It's like they have a $9.99 a month and a $14.99 a month. I pay $14.99 a month, and I have hundreds of thousands of songs of different genres to choose from, even some world music. I've done a Middle Eastern wedding. I've done one wedding where the couple was mixed. The groom was Mexican. The bride was Japanese. Although they liked a lot of American pop music. But, you know, it's always nice to be able to, you know, especially with the Hispanic community as large as it is, it's always good to be able to pull up music, you know, as far as Mexican music or Hispanic music is concerned, merengue, bachata, mariachi music. And then they have, you know, different ethnic groups have their own top 40 artists that are popular on their radio stations.
Exactly.
You know, that play popular music, you know, that they like to dance to. So that's been a big help, you know, bringing along a tablet to supplement your collection.
Just a little thing before I get to the next question off the cuff in this playing part. It's a Q&A about karaoke, which, you know, a lot of people like it, but some of it, you know, I'm not too crazy about, but some people are so adamant about this karaoke. Now, in the karaoke field, when you are DJ, the question I wanted to ask was, based on the karaoke, do you do the same thing with karaoke if you don't have the song? Because on the new systems, if you get a pack or whatever, it's 30,000 songs. So now you've got Chart Pack, you've got Music Maestro, and they have 70, 80, 90, maybe 400 songs on each one. How do you go and get a song since you no longer use the book to get a song if you don't have it on your list? Do you use the same method?
The big difference between doing DJ music and doing karaoke is that, unfortunately, I don't think there's any companies out there that offer karaoke songs on the fly. You would have to actually purchase it, you know, prior to the gig. What I normally do, and I've learned this from watching a lot of other KJs, which is a karaoke jock, is if you don't have a song, you tell the customer, I'll have it next time. And so I have a little side list, piece of paper, and when somebody asks me for a song I don't have it, I'll tell them, hey, I'll have it next week. And I write down the name of the song and the artist. And what I do is I go online. There's a couple websites where you can go and buy one track. And they usually run around $2 to $3 a piece. At one time when we were playing CDs, you know, karaoke discs.
Yeah.
And you'd have to, if you wanted that one song, you'd have to buy the entire disc. And you may have everything else on the disc already. Which doubles and triples your collection. You know, you have a lot of repeats. But there are also those people who've been singing karaoke, especially the older crowd, that they're stuck on a particular version of the song. The first company to really come out with karaoke songs was called DK. And their versions of the songs was probably the closest to the original version.
Now, what was
and
that again?
Of course, these karaoke songs are made with real musicians.
Which one was that?
DK.
Oh, but they're no longer in business, are they? No.
No, they've been out a long time ago. But a lot of people still have the disc, and when they changed over to being digital, they downloaded on their hard drive, converted them into what they call CDG plus MP3 format, which is the graphics, which shows the words and the music. So there's a lot of people who are just used to, it's just like used to driving a certain type of vehicle. You know, if you're used to driving a nice, large luxury car, it's kind of hard to get into a smaller car. And a lot of people feel the same way about the DK versions of karaoke. If you don't have the DK version, they won't sing. I've actually had people get pissed off and walk out because I didn't have the DK version.
Well, that happened to me. Well, what's today? Wednesday? That happened to me Monday. I went to karaoke. I always go to karaoke because I like to hear people sing. And now you know me. I like one little song, and that's God Bless the Child or Cry Me a River, and it has to be the version, and he didn't have it, so I didn't sing. I have my Music Maestro, Billie Holiday, in Music right. Maestro. And he didn't have mm-hmm. it. And I bought the disc, like you said, and I think I paid like $25 for the disc. And the only song right. I want to sing on the disc is that.
right.
He didn't have it. I didn't sing. I said, well, do you have Cry Me a River by Patsy Cline? I mean, not Patsy Cline, Julie London. He didn't have it,
right.
so I didn't sing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right. Let's get into some particulars, everything that you told us. I'm hoping that people will come back and listen to it because it's extremely interesting. And this is the part of the show I like the most, when you advise the listeners who might want to get into DJing what they need. So let's take a specialized event. Let's say a wedding. How does a DJ really prepare for doing a wedding reception?
Well, it's all about the bride and groom, particularly the bride, okay. as I stated earlier in a conversation.
Right.
Their needs and their requests are the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Everything they need, everything they want, make sure you can do it. Make sure when you meet with the bride and groom, you know, you let them know that if there's anything you can do, you got to be very accommodating, very professional. Their list of songs, what they require, you know, and also when it comes to wedding receptions, this is where personality and voice fall into play more importantly than anything else. It's most important that the DJ be able to talk, be enunciative, and be professional on the microphone, because he has to MC the reception, introduction of the bridal party, introduction of the first dance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
I've so that's the little something else you have to do at
right.
a wedding
that's
reception.
That's extremely important, yeah.
Aside from playing the music.
Right.
And be dressed appropriately.
Again, you mentioned this before, and I want you to repeat it again. How important is appearance in this fast-paced presentation? A lot of us can go to rave parties. We can go to some hard rock or just rap or hip-hop, and we see the guy, he's got these shirts on, his hair's flying all over the place. But when you're doing some presentations, how important is appearance? When should you change your appearance?
Very important. You should be able to have a DJ should have enough common sense and enough expertise, not just in playing the music, but also your appearance. Appearance is very important. Like I stated earlier, when a person walks into an event and you're the DJ and you're up on the stage and you're the center of attention, the first thing they're going to look at is your appearance. How well groomed you are, how well dressed you are, you know, and then they'll look at your setup. They might look at your setup first before they look at you. But most of the time, people look at you. When you walk into, even when I go to meet a client, I'll go with a shirt and a tie on. I'll go, you know, dress nicely.
Right.
You know, because you're going to meet this client. You're pitching for their business. And there's hundreds of many, many other people they can call. But when you go to meet that client and you reach your hand out and shake their hand or give them a firm handshake, hi, good evening, my name is Reggie Kelly. It's a pleasure meeting you, da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, and they're left with that impression. So if they did call around, which a lot of people nowadays do because most people are shopping for price and not necessarily for quality. So, you know,
exactly.
The impression you leave or you give them first initially will be the thing that will determine whether you get the gig or someone else gets it.
Are there any sites where, let's say, I know there aren't that many females, and they might not want to go out and try to go to clubs and bars to get a gig. Are there any sites online that they could possibly go to if you're a female and not readily want to go out into the bars?
Go out as far as having fun or go out to become a DJ?
Huh?
Are you talking about a female going out to become a DJ?
Yes.
Or just,
is there any sites that they can go on instead of doing that round robin type thing?
Oh, you're talking about somebody going out looking for somewhere to go.
Yeah.
To get
a job.
Social media.
To get a gig, but not necessarily.
Oh, to get a job. To get a job.
Yeah.
I don't know any right off the top of my head, but I would just Google it up. Google up, you know, how to become more a female DJ or what to do to become a female DJ or something like that. And I'm sure that Google will probably pop up many, many, many searches as far as different places to go to read up on, you know, because that would be, that's something very unique. I mean, I remember back in the 70s, late 70s, early mid 80s, there was a couple of ladies who were DJing, and they were well known. One particular girl who was in Baltimore, Paulette Lucas, she was real popular, and a lot of DJs were influenced by her, you know, back in the day. She was one of the most popular. And then, of course, there was a young lady who passed away, unfortunately. It was on 90TQ, Kay Swift. She was a Baltimore club DJ of the Baltimore club music genre, which Baltimore club music to Baltimore is like go-go music is to D.C.
Right.
Yeah, I would just go Google it up, you know, and do some research. But being a, you know, being a female DJ, there are a couple of professional female DJs out here that command big bucks. You know, they look good, they dress well, and they have skills. They have mad skills. You know, so.
Okay, now we're getting to
that's
the
all
part.
That's the only thing I would say.
Okay, very good, and I'm sure you, like you said, you'll find something if you Google it up. Or even ask people like yourself, you know. Now we get to the most important part. That is, I've done all of this. I got all of this. So what are the preferred methods of payment accepted by most DJs who travel many places?
Well, preferred method of payment is generally cash. Most bars, taverns, pubs, and night spots, you know, they pay, you know, just like some construction workers or other jobs. Of folks that want to try to, you know, not report everything under the table, so to speak. You know, they pay you cash right out the drawer. Some businesses will write you a check, you know. Generally, most DJs don't take personal checks unless it's somebody they might know very well. But now, you know, you have the capability of being able to take credit cards. Now they have companies like, you know, like PayPal.
Intuit. Yeah.
There's something called Square. And a couple other companies that you can, if you have your iPhone or your or a smartphone or Android, you can download an app, stick the little thing, the swiper, the card swiper in, and you can take credit card payments and even over the phone. And especially with a reputable company like PayPal. You know, so I found that to be very helpful because a lot of times people don't always have cash on them and they always can't run to the bank machine. Or they might not have that, you know, they'll have their credit card on them, and you can take it right there, and it's secure and it's safe. And I found that to be very helpful, especially when I do out-of-town gigs. I did a wedding a couple of years ago in York, Pennsylvania. And instead of having to drive all the way to meet the client and meet them in person and sign the contract and pick up the deposit, I told them, hey, I have a PayPal account, business account. Oh, okay. I'll send them an invoice. I'll send them an invoice. And the only information from their credit card I retain are the last four digits, which is most what most companies do. Everything else is X'd out. So and PayPal send them a receipt, you know, stating that they made X amount of dollar payment to, you know, the musicologist, professional music entertainment services, Reginald Kelly, on such and so on. So they with all the information, they get a copy, I get a copy, and I retain it for my records. That's been very helpful. Very, very helpful.
Reverend, this has been absolutely fantastic. So before we actually close out, can you give our audience your contact information that you would like for them?
Most certainly. I can
go
be
right
reached to my business phone number is 410-645-0495. Generally, I'm in my office Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Or you can email me at Consummate Pro DJ, that's C-O-N as in Nancy, C-O-N as in Nancy, S-U-M as in Mary, E, P as in Paul, R-O as in Oscar, D as in Disc, J as in Jockey, at gmail.com. So that's Consummate Pro DJ, at gmail.com. And I have a website. And my website, where you can find out more information about me and our services, is www.themusicologistbaltimore.com. All lowercase letters and all one word, no spaces.
Reggie, thanks so much. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll be airing off. Thanks so much, Reggie, and we will be talking to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a two-second break, and then we'll come back to sign off.
And the sun is shining bright. I looked out of the window.
Thanks so much. This is Adele Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we are broadcasting on bbsradio.com, station 2. You can listen to all of our previous broadcasts in the archives on our website, link, bbsradio.com, Wish Upon a Star. We also would like for you to please send your comments and suggestions at email, musicradio34@gmail.com. Our special honored guest today was Reginald Kelly, Jr., professional musicologist and the president of Professional Music Entertainment Service. Again, thanks for listening. This is Andel, your host, and Denise Banks, your coordinator, saying, keep reaching for the stars.